Okay, so we're starting Meshechach Parshas Tetzaveh, which is on page Kuf Lamed Vov. And of course, Tetzaveh continues the discussion of the Mishkan, which we had last week in Truma, focusing on some other aspects of the Mishkan, and most specifically on the Big Day Kahuna, the various different clothing which the Kohen Gadol, the Kohen Hevyot, would wear. I wanted to start with the very first piece in the Meshechach on page Kuf Lamed Vov, where in the very beginning of the parasha, as we know, the first two psukim deal with the making and the lighting of the menorah, the lighting of the menorah, I should say, on the part of the Kohanim. The Atot Tetzaveh B'nei Yisrael, the parasha opens up, you should command the Jewish people, V'yikhu Eilecha Shemen Zayis Zoch Kosis Lamor, and they should take for you pure olive oil for the mar, for the lighting of the menorah in the Mishkan and later the Beis HaMikdash. Meshech Chachma is intrigued by the word Eilecha. Right? They should take for you Shemen Zayis Zoch, the pure olive oil, in order to light the menorah. In what sense was the oil which was taken, or the lighting of the menorah, for you, i.e., for Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned anywhere in the parasha, but for Moshe Rabbeinu. No, for Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Because you go on to the next pasuk, the oil mod ichus acharoches asher al hoidus, yarof so Aharon uvonov me'erv ha'bokel lefei Hashem. So Aharon is being addressed, the Lashon Nistar, in the third person. The Ve'ata, right, the Lashon Nochach, the second person, with which the parasha opens up, is none other than Moshe Rabbeinu. HaKadosh Baruch is talking to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he's saying, Ve'ata Tetzaveh B'nei Yisrael, you should command the Jewish people. So first of all, the word Eilecha, which seems to be extraneous, Ve'yikhu Shemen Zayisach, what do you mean? You know, they have to bring it? The pasuk has to tell us that they have to bring it to Moshe Rabbeinu. Well, I have to bring it to Moshe Rabbeinu, so bring it, you know, you have an oil checkpoint, you know, and let the, you know, let the second in command, let the lieutenants handle it. Why do I have to bring it down to Moshe Rabbeinu? And in what sense is Moshe Rabbeinu really involved with the menorah? I mean, again, the menorah was lit by the Kohanim, Moshe was not a Kohen. So in what sense is it Eilecha, is the oil going to you? It says Moshe Chachma as follows. You're talking about Pidivir Avram Ibn Ezra, the Parashas Baaloscha. One can explain this perhaps based on an Ibn Ezra in the beginning of Baaloscha. The beginning of Baaloscha in Bamidbar also talks about the lighting of the menorah. And there the Ibn Ezra says as follows. Sha'af al-pi sha'omru kol dibros shenidbar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yimoshe ohoyo elo bayom shenemar biyom dider v'chulein. בכל זה, כשהיו הנרות דולקים, היו כיום, ודיבר עמו בלילה. בן עזרא, פרשת בלוסקה, says a tremendous chiddush. The Chazal say, in the Mechilta, that all of the nevuos came to Moshe Rabbeinu, all of the prophecies came to Moshe Rabbeinu, bayom, during the daytime hours. How do we know that? Because the pasuk speaks about Biyom Diber Hashem El Moshe, on the day on which HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Moshe. So in other words, it was, you know, the Nevuos were time-bound. The Nevuos came to Moshe Rabbeinu during the day and not at night. Why not? You know, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't burning the midnight oil, right? So apparently in this, you know, this, the Meshech Chachma doesn't say explicitly, but it seems to come out from the Meshech Chachma's discussion a little bit later on. You know, the day is a time of clarity, as evidenced by the fact that you have visual clarity during the day. So the visual clarity that exists during the day carries over to a kind of mental clarity as well. If you can see well, you can think well. Right? So the Ribbono Shel Olam revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu Davka during the day. At night, when you couldn't see, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was incapable of having nevuos as well. Except, says the Ibn Ezra, when the menorah was lit. The menorah being lit at night enabled the Hashras HaShchina to come down at night as if it was day. Now we spoke last week, we quoted, when we learned Parshas Truma, we saw the Meshech Chachma made much of the fact that, you know, the Rambam's Shita is, the Rambam's opinion is that the menorah burns in the Beis HaMikdash during the day as well, not just at night. And said the Meshech Chachma, that was Davka to illustrate that the menorah's light was not really needed in a physical sense. It's not like, you know, you had to find your socks in the Kodesh, and you know, therefore you needed to have a light on. No, there was no physical need for light, and that's why the menorah burned during the day as well, according to the Rambam, in order to illustrate that these lights are being lit for a spiritual purpose, not just for the physical purpose of being able to discern things by their physical light. So that's true, right? In other words, the menorah was not necessary for its physical light, but in a kind of backhanded sense, the menorah was necessary for its spiritual light. When the menorah burned, it was considered to be day for the purposes of Nevuah, writes the Ibn Ezra, and thus Moshe Rabbeinu was able to receive Nevuah at night as long as the menorah was burning. Oh. So says the Meshech Chachma, so that explains the word Eilecha. That's why our pasuk says that when the Jews gather the oil for the menorah, they should bring it to you, right? Whereas the Meshech Chachma is about to translate for you. In other words, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, will be a beneficiary of the fact that the menorah is going to burn in the Mishkan. Right? When the oil is gathered and the menorah is lit, it's going to be lit for you. It's going to benefit you, Moshe Rabbeinu. She'ha'adam daito bohir be'es ha'ar. Because the person has a certain mental clarity when there is light. Right? Now that could either come from the natural light or in artificial light as well. We can concentrate better in artificial light, be it candlelight, be it electricity, whatever it happens to be. Uchimo ein ora ela simcha. He quotes from the Tana Devei Eliyahu. Right, that light means simcha, light, aura and simcha, light and happiness are synonymous because people feel good when they can see. That's why it was necessary to have light in order for Moshe Rabbeinu to receive Nevuah. Light makes you happy. Happiness is a prerequisite of Nevuah. If you're sad, you can't receive Nevuah. So only when there was light could Moshe Rabbeinu receive Nevuah. So that was either during the daytime or at night when the menorah was lit. Right? So in other words, the light of the menorah ultimately benefited Moshe Rabbeinu. Hence, v'ikhu eilecha, right? The oil should be brought for you because it was not just stam that they lit the menorah. It enabled Moshe Rabbeinu to be able to receive Nevuah. Aval chukas olam l'doroseichem meyes b'nei Yisrael. However, but the pasuk then goes on to say in the next pasuk that whereas when the oil was collected during the time of the Mishkan was built and was being erected during the era of Moshe Rabbeinu, it was Eilecha, it served a real concrete purpose to burn the menorah at night, i.e. to enable Moshe Rabbeinu to receive his Nevuah, but that's only Bisman HaMishkan. But then the next pasuk goes on to say, that the Kohanim going forward should continuously light the menorah at night. Chukas olam l'dorosam, an eternal chok, an eternal law for the future generations, meyes b'nei Yisrael, from the Jewish people. Says the Meshech Chachma, that pasuk in a sense stands in contrast to the first pasuk. Aval chukas olam l'dorosam meyes b'nei Yisrael. Once Moshe Rabbeinu passes on, and that level of Nevuah is no longer going to be achieved by anyone, the lighting of the menorah at night doesn't really serve any purpose in terms of a Nevuah. Right? It's mashma from the Meshech Chachma that lesser Nevi'im were, you know, could only be Menabe, could only prophesize during the day. In other words, a Yeshaya Anovi, a Yeriah Anovi, couldn't go into a room at night, light up a candle, and say, okay, Rabbanu Shalom, I'm ready to go, you know, throw the Nevuah my way. No. In other words, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu's godless was that he could prophesize during the day or at night with artificial light, but no other Navi had that ability to prophesize at night with artificial light. That was unique to Moshe Rabbeinu. So in other words, the role of the menorah as a pragmatic vehicle for Nevuah at night stopped after Moshe Rabbeinu. So Mimela says the Meshech Chachma, so post Moshe Rabbeinu, it's chukas olam l'dorosam. The lighting of the menorah at night in the Beis HaMikdosh, in the Mishkan, it is simply a chok. It's simply a divine decree which doesn't have any practical outcome, like it did during the time that Moshe Rabbeinu was alive in the Mishkan, and hence the second pasuk is describing the role the menorah is going to play after Moshe Rabbeinu. For you, it's a lecha, but post you, it's chukas olam v'rosa. And here again, Kedarko Bakodesh, the Meshechachma ties this in with an Achron, right? In other words, a position in Achronim in Choshen Mishpat, all of a sudden now becomes clear, no pun intended, based on our analysis of a menorah over here. The halacha is that a din Torah can only be held by day. Right? Comes the Sma, one of the principal commentaries on the Choshen Mishpat, and he says, you know, you can hold a din Torah at night as long as you have lights, right? So where did that come from? So says the Meshech Chachma, comes from here. You know, in other words, a din Torah shouldn't be worse than nevuah. Nevuah is also one of those things that's restricted to the daytime, but yet nevuah could be achieved at least by Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, using artificial light at night, as we see here in this discussion. So too says the Sma, for us lesser mortals. You know, the lesson is that, you know, maybe we can't judge a din Torah at night. Why? Because apparently we don't have the yishuv hadas, we don't have the kind of mental clarity at night that we do during the day. But if you could achieve that mental clarity artificially at night by lighting candles, right, or by putting on the lights, whatever it is, so the night might as well become the day. So the Sma basically applies this lesson of the menorah to a din Torah halacha l'maisa. Right? Okay, that's interesting in its own right. Oftentimes, right? In other words, let's see. Ein roin negoy melot bayom, right? Uviyom heira ospo bosar chay yitzma. The pasuk says that the kohen can only pass on saras during the day. Right. Well, el bayom is the lashon of Chazal. That's the lashon of the pasuk is just bayom, right? Uviyom heira ospo bosar chay yitzma, right? On the day in which, you know, the afflicted skin is seen on the person, he should be declared to be Tomei. Or, Uviyom Hashmini Yimol Besar Arlasa, right, that the Bris Milah should take place on the eighth day, right, so we know that Bris Milah is another one of those things that can only be done during the day, not at night. So generally, yeah, I mean, it could be there are exceptions to the rule, but B'derech Klal, yeah, you know, B'yom, you know, Stam, when referring to mitzvahs or the like, generally does have the connotation of, you know, the daylight hours as opposed to the nighttime hours. But here, so Meshech Chachma has developed this idea, right, that the role of the menorah was to increase a certain hashras hashchina by Moshe Rabbeinu, a certain level of nevuah that Moshe Rabbeinu had. And then the Meshech Chachma takes this idea and runs with it a little bit. The Meshech Chachma, we're going to see, has two paragraphs that follow, just to kind of fill us in on what's going to happen, a little bit of an overview of what's going to happen in the next two paragraphs. Meshech Chachma is going to call our attention to the fact that during the first Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo HaMelech built, Shlomo HaMelech added on an additional 10 menorahs to the menorah that Moshe Rabbeinu had made. So in other words, Sach HaKol, in the first Beis HaMikdash, there were actually 11 menorahs that were there in the Kodesh, right? In contrast, by the second Beis HaMikdash, they only used a single menorah, right? Now, before you learned this Meshech Chachma, you probably thought that was an issue of aesthetics, you know? Big building, you know, you don't want to have a lot of empty space, you know? I mean, furnishing a building is very, very important. So being that the Beis HaMikdash was bigger than the Mishkan that Moshe Rabbeinu built, so Shlomo HaMelech decided to go big. You know, let's not just do one menorah, let's do 11 menorahs. Right? The Bayis Sheni, well, we know the Bayis Sheni was built during a time of immense poverty. You know, it was not, at least until Herod fixed up the second Beis HaMikdash. The original second Beis HaMikdash was not on a really, you know, grand scale the way the first one was. Alright, so we chalk it up to aesthetics. Right? That's what you would think, you know, when encountering that fact. But now, says the Meshech Chachma, now that I've told you that the menorah actually has a real functional role to play, it enabled Moshe Rabbeinu to have a greater degree of nevuah, a greater degree of hashras hashchina. Perhaps that's what's going on as well with the additional menorahs that were provided by Shlomo HaMelech. And he makes the following fascinating calculation. Let's take a look inside. Uvezei yesh lefarish ma'ad de'asa shlomo chamisha menorot, Rebbe Elazar ben Shmuel Omar, Perek Shnei Alechem ve'al v'chule. Right? He makes reference to the fact that Shlomo HaMelech made an additional five menorahs, by which he means, which is clear from the continuation as well as from the Pesukim, you know, in Divrei HaYomim that he's going to quote, Shlomo HaMelech made five menorahs on either side of the Kodesh, in addition to the one menorah, which was the menorah of Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, five plus one, you know, came out to be 11. Well, the Kulam Hayu Madlikim, Diksid es haminoros v'nevoseyem levaharom kam mishpot. Uksuto shahoyim adlik b'kulam. Says the Meshech Chochma, my opinion is that Shlomo HaMelech used to light, or used to have lit, each of the 11 menoros every night, or additionally every day, according to the Rambam. Right? As is the simple pshat in the Pasuk in Divrei HaYomim, which describes these menoros, that says the menoros b'nei roseyam leva'arom kam mishpot. Leva'arom means to have them, plural, burn. So says the Meshech Chochma, the way things worked in the first Beis HaMikdosh was that every night 11 menoros were kindled. Udalokipi Rish Rashi, the pa'amim b'zel, upa'amim b'zel. As opposed to Rashi, right? He argues on Rashi. Right, but Rashi there in Divrei HaYomim says Leva'arom means that he moved around. You know, it was like Sifrei Torah in a shul. You know, okay. Sometimes we learn from this one. Sometimes we learn from that one. In other words, but at any given time, they weren't actually lighting all 11 menorahs. Says Rashi. Says Meshech Chochma, I disagree. The Pashut of Pshat is Leva'arom. You know, they were all made to burn. I think Moshe Rabbeinu was always lit, but you know they would rotate among the other 10, right? Yuyim v'yavak melachim dal kulon hayim mesader rak v'shel Moshe tchila v'yuyim shom tam shol shulchan v'kiyur. Right? He refers you to a yalkut to back himself up. The yalkut, the medrash, points out that there were additional shulchanos. Right? There were 10 additional shulchanos in the Kodesh as well, and by the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo HaMelech, and the Alkut they arrived that they would be Mesader, the Lechem Aponim, on Moshe's Shulchan first, but then the Lechem Aponim would be set up, or a set of Lechem Aponim would be set up on all the Shulchanos. Right? So in other words, says the Meshech Chochma, what's true of the Shulchanos, Lechara, is true of the Menoros as well, that it was not just a rotation, but it was actually all of them were being utilized. And he quotes, the Yalkut there goes on to say that the greater number of Shulchanos, and for that matter, Kiyoros, right, which existed, the Kiyor was the bowl which was utilized for the washing of the hands and feet of the Kohanim. The greater number of Kiyoros, which existed as well by the first Beis HaMikdash, was not just by accident, and it wasn't just aesthetics, and it wasn't just, you know, to make things prettier, but explains the Yalkut, the Shulchan was the source of parnasa for the Jewish people, and when Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, they poshut needed more parnasa. So how do you get more parnasa? So have more shulchanos, right? So in other words, it was all not just symbolic and whatnot. You know, it really played a function. There was a greater need to upgrade the spiritual power of the Beis HaMikdash vis-a-vis the spiritual power of the Mishkan. And now he goes on to make the following cheshbon. Okay, so by David HaMelech as well, we find that even before the first Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo, David HaMelech was already setting aside a certain amount of gold for the menoros. So clearly this was not just Shlomo doing this on a whim, but this was part of the plans. David HaMelech anticipated that there would be extra menoros in the first Beis HaMikdash. Now how do we come to 10? So he makes the following cheshbon. Shum the Dar Shikema Shabamikdash Ayarochov Esther Al Shloshim Amma Haya Menorah Achas should be Shabamishkan. Right? Make a cheshbon. In the Mishkan, it was 10 amos wide by 30 amos long. Right? So there was one menorah for that amount of space. Imkain Al Kola Cheshbon Hu Esther Pa'omim Shloshim. Right? So if you figure out the area, right, it's going to be 10 times 30, i.e. 3,000. Right? That goes to show you how good my math is, right? 300. Hu shlosh meos amma, right? So it's an area of 300 amos. 300 square amos. V'kolmosol eser amos. Right? And then the height of the Mishkan was 10 amos. So, which gives you a total cubic area of 3,000 cubic amos. Lefisa hacheshbon. So let's just figure out for a moment. Ha'echol shabon ha'shlomo ha'yoshishim arochav esrim. Right? So when you figure out that the dimensions of the hechol, of the inner part of the Beis HaMikdash, which was built by Shlomo, so it's 60 amos by 20 amos. In Cain, esrim pa'amim shishim, hu elef u'shnei meos. Right? So it comes out to 1,200 square amos, the komoso shloshim, right? And then it's 30 amos high. Umkein hu gimel pa'amim kocho hu shloshes alofim v'shesh meos. So it comes out, you have 3,600 cubic amos, right? In Cain, hayamuchrach liyos echadesar menoros. Right? So what's going to come out is that you have approximately 12 times the amount of cubic area in the mikdash that you had in the Mishkan. Right? In other words, it's 300 cubic amos in the Mishkan, 3,600 cubic, right? 3,600 cubic amos in the mikdash, right? So that comes out, it's 12 times more. In Cain, hayu muchrach liyos achad asar menoros, ulevad Moshe asar menoros, chamesh miyamin shal Moshe v'chamesh mismal shal Moshe. Right? So he says, so if you make a cheshbon, so it was 12 times bigger, right? So you should really require 12 menoros in the Beis HaMikdash as opposed to the one menorah that was in the Mishkan. So we don't have that. We have 11 menoros, right? Moshe's plus another 5. Im kein lefi acheshbon hatzarlios odecha achas. So you really should have required another one to be 12. Okay, but they wanted to make it symmetrical. So in other words, you need to have Moshe Rabbeinu's in the middle, and then 5 on either side. So in other words, really, it should have been 12, but you know, the closest they could come to that was 11, just to keep the symmetry. Symmetric.
No. Oh. For example, if there's
Okay, so this is a direct consequence of the idea that he starts off with in the beginning. Dehainu, if you were to say that the menorah was a purely aesthetic thing, or not even that, that the menorah, we make a menorah because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to make a menorah, so what do I care whether it's a really small mikdash, really big mikdash, you know, Shem made it, said make a menorah, okay, I mean, sometimes you have a shul where it's huge, 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 okay, but we happen to get a small aron, okay, the same aron that can work in a little shul can work in a big shul and vice versa, you know, the main thing is it should all be Sefer Torah, or multiple Sefer Torah. But Meshech Chachma started out this piece by saying that the menorah, by casting light, enables the Hashras Hashchina to come in. Right? In other words, the menorah transforms the area into a lit area such that Nevuah can be achieved by those who were in that area. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu was able to achieve Nevuah even at night, not just during the day. So in other words, if that's going to work for the mikdash, says the Meshech Chachma, the Chorin has to work proportionately. Right? Now again, you could say, well, you know, that's not the way Hashras Hashchina works. But apparently,
why make a menorah that's 12 times the size of the other menorah? Why 12 times?
I don't think it would work proportionately. In other words, you know, you want to, because again, think of lighting up a room, right? So it's not just a question of the wattage; it's a question of the positioning, right? In other words, if you're going to have, especially if you have oil lamps, right, which are not exactly the same as fluorescents or whatnot, you know, so you want to be able to spread that amount of light around the room. Basically, since the whole idea is to light up the room, and why do we light up the room? Because if the room is lit sufficiently, you can have Hashras Hashchina. If the room is not lit sufficiently, as we saw before, you can't have Hashras Hashchina. So as the mikdash grows, the need to have additional menorahs grows proportionately. Right? It's an interesting idea that he wants to bring out over here. The proportions work out. Right? Uprapa Rashi Sha Dvihaya Gavoa Esrim in Cain, Lohoya Rakmea Alma Yosef. And the truth is, Rashi holds that the Vir, the area where the Kodesh, was only 20 amos high, not 30 amos high. So if you do the math then, so it comes out there's only 100 cubic amos difference between the way things, between the Mishkan and the Mikdash. You would take off an extra 100 cubic amos. Right? So that for sure works out. Then you don't even have to say the cheshbon that I said before, that it really should have been 12, but we had to keep it symmetrical in 11. No, you can, it's 11 because then the proportions really happen to work out. And that's the fact that there were 10 additional menorahs, prompted Shlomo HaMelech to make 10 additional shulchanos. Because one of the things that it says in Chumash is that the shulchan has to be opposite the menorah. Right? So if you tell me that, come on, the menorah that Moshe Rabbeinu made is the quote-unquote real menorah, and these other ones are just for show. All right, so maybe there is no halacha that these menorahs need a corresponding shulchan. But if you tell me, as the Meshech Chachma is suggesting, that the additional menorahs were necessary not just for aesthetic purposes, but you needed, by the Mikdash, because of the growth and the proportional size of the Mikdash, you needed 11 menorahs to accomplish in the Mikdash what one menorah did in the Mishkan. So Mimela, every menorah is a real menorah, quote-unquote, and every menorah has to be Nochach HaShulchan, and every Shulchan has to be Nochach HaMenorah. So in other words, we need, the corresponding number of Shulchanos to the corresponding number of menorahs. Now all of this need to proportionally increase the amount of light. Why? Because the light enables this kind of yishuv hadas, this clarity of mind and perception, which is necessary for the presence of the Shechinah to come in. All of that was only necessary in the first Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because the Shechinah only really rests in the first Beis HaMikdash. The degree to which Hashras HaShechinah existed in the second Beis HaMikdash was very scaled back. Right? Again, just to quote the Kuzari, because we're doing it in the other Shia, the Kuzari notes that when we talk about the Shechinah, there are different madregas of the Shechinah. Right? To some extent, after the Churban HaBayis, the Shechinah is no longer in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, but again, on a certain other level, there is a certain degree of Hashras HaShechinah which exists in Eretz Yisrael even now. Right? So, there are levels. Clearly, there was some degree of Hashras HaShechinah by the second Beis HaMikdash. There was certainly Kedusha that was there. But as we know, the full-fledged Hashras HaShechinah which existed during the first Beis HaMikdash was absent during the second Beis HaMikdash. There was no Aron, there was no Urim V'Tumim. Right, they didn't have Nevuah really during the second Beis HaMikdash, with the exception of the very, very early days of the second Beis HaMikdash. So Mimela, the need to have this light was not really functional. There was no need to have this proportional amount of light for Hashras HaShechinah by the second Mikdash. Aval b'Mikdash Shemi she'eno rak chok. Right, by the second Beis HaMikdash they lit the menorah because there's a mitzvah to light the menorah. It didn't quote unquote do anything. It was just a fulfillment of God's command. So sagi ba'achas. That's why it was sufficient just to have one menorah in the second Beis HaMikdash, and there wasn't this need to work out the great proportions, the way that Shlomo HaMelech and David, indeed, before him, felt the need to work it out. No, I don't think so. The question is, was there 1/12 of Hashras HaShechinah in the Mishkan is in the Beis HaMikdash? I don't think so. I think what he's trying to say is as follows. You have to, when the room is completely lit, you can have Hashras HaShechinah. Right? So in the Mishkan, it took less to light up the room, a smaller room. Right? And he had the complete Hashras HaShechinah. In the Mikdash, to achieve that same Hashras HaShechinah, because it was a bigger room, you needed to have more light. I mean, the truth is, you could take his vort about the Hashras HaShechinah out, And you could just say on a very, very pragmatic level, since it was a bigger room, they needed more light. You know, whatever the reason was for having the light, right? You know, you could... But it does answer the second base hamikdash, right? So if you didn't have to deal with the question of the second base hamikdash, you could explain this whole thing pragmatically, right? But once you bring in that the second base hamikdash, you didn't have, you know, the multiple menorahs that you had in the first base hamikdash. So mimela, you're left trying to say that the menorah must have actually done something in the mishkan in the first base hamikdash, something that was absent the second time around, right? Okay, so very, very, very fascinating food for thought as to what the menorah did exactly. I want to skip one piece and just look at the second piece on the left-hand column over there. My wife, who has the Meshech Chochmas at home from her days in Michlala with Rabbi Cooperman when she took the classes with him, she has down in her notes on this next piece a Chassidus Shavuot. Right, the word, not a Chassidus Shavuot, but the words a Chassidus Shavuot. So we'll take a look at this Chassidus Shavuot, which is coming up, and depending on how you feel about Chassidus Shavuot, well, you'll either like it or otherwise. V'cheshev afudaso asher olov. Right, so that's a little bit later on in the parsha. The parsha is describing the ephod. Right, Perek Chavches. The belt with which it is in place, which is on it, should be of the same workmanship. Right? Because the ephod had a belt that was part of it and was made in the same way as the ephod itself. Why is the belt of the ephod called a cheshev? I don't know. Usually a belt is a chagorah, right? Why do we call the belt of the ephod cheshev? So he says like this. He's talking about derech remes, maybe in a remes kind of sense, in a more homiletic kind of sense, or in a hinting sense. The meaning of the word cheshev is as follows: the amru ephod mechaper el avod azara. Right, Chazal say v'sichtes vachim that the ephod, you know, each of the begadim, says the gemara vachim was mechaper, it atoned for a certain type of national sin which the Jewish people, you know, might commit. So the ephod was mechaper on avodah zarah. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in the next piece. U'machshava eitzel avodah zarah have a kemaisek. Moshe calls himself parakavah de kiddushin. And we know the Gemara tells us that whereas when it comes to most aveiros, machshava eino kemaisek, that just thinking about the aveira is not the same as actually doing the aveira. The exception is avodah zarah. When it comes to avodah zarah, even the thought of avodah zarah is considered by the Ribbono Shel Olam as if you did it. V'zeshe Omer v'cheshev afudaso asher olav k'ma'aseihu. The belt of the ephod, but v'cheshev, the machshava of ephod, of avodah zarah, k'ma'aseihu, literally like its workmanship, but can also be translated as is just like the action. V'cheshev k'ma'aseihu, machshava k'maisa. So when it comes to the ephod, which symbolizes avodah zarah, you should realize that there's this correlation between cheshev and ma'aseihu, hence the unusual choice of words to describe the belt as being cheshev. It's a pretty good chassidish Torah, you know, for a litvak anyway. You know, it's an interesting play on words. So either you like that, or you want to move on to the next piece. Okay. So the next piece also deals with the ephod, and you know, specifically some part of the relationship between the ephod and the choshen. Lokachos shei avnei shoham. Right, there were two sets of stones which were part of the begadim of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol had an ephod, which, you know, Rashi describes very famously as being like an apron. Rashi famously in this week's parasha says, I have no idea what the ephod really is, but I see that the women in France, when they go riding on their horses, they wear these kind of aprons. And I guess that was probably, based on the description, probably the Kohen Gadol's ephod looked something like that. Okay. So on the straps of the ephod were two stones, shtei avnei shoham. Right? They were two shoham stones made of a certain type of material, or a certain type of stone. right? In addition to that, we know that on the Choshen Mishpat itself, on the breastplate, which the Kohen Gadol wore, so there were 12 stones representing the 12 Shvatim. Each stone was assigned to a particular Shevet. And actually, one of the stones of the Choshen was Shoham. Right? If you look in the Pesukim, Perkhof Ches, Pasuk Yud Zayin, right, there are four rows of stones. Tur Oden Pitno Vareka Satura Ephod, Satura Shane Yopit Nopek Sapir Yohalom, Satura Shlishi Leshim Shabobi Aslomo, Yatura Rabi Tarshish Vishoham Vyoshve. Right, those the last three stones at the bottom were Tarshish, Shoham, and Yoshve. In other words, Shoham, in addition to the two stones on the ephod being made of being Shoham, Shoham was also the type of stone which was the next to last stone on the Choshen. Interesting. What's the significance of that? He says as follows. He named the Shoham the Choshen Hulamate Yosef. Right? If you calculate which shevet went with which stone, so the Shoham on the Choshen was the shevet of Yosef. Right? Now, the last two stones were Yosef and Binyamin. So, interesting that the Shoham stone on the Choshen is Yosef, and the two stones on the Ephod, upon which the names of all the Shvatim were written, were Davka from Shoham. Right? That's very interesting. You would have thought that at the very least, if you're going to have stones that are going to represent all of Klal Yisrael, they should be a stone which is not any of the stones, but that are part of the Choshen. Here you have Shoham doing double duty. On the Choshen, it's the stone of Yosef, and on the Ephod, Shoham is all of the Shvatim. What's pshat in that? So he says, Remez she Yisrael nikroin al shein Yosef. Chmo she'omer b'meru shocher tov mikro ula yichonein she'eris Yosef. Right? We find that all of Klal Yisrael, in a certain sense, are sometimes called Yosef, right? Because even though, obviously, we're not all from Shevet Yosef, and probably none of us here, if we had to guess, right, are probably from Shevet Yosef, or mostly from Shevet Yehuda, we're used to thinking about ourselves as Yehudim, as people from Shevet Yehuda. Nonetheless, when you express the idea of the Jewish people in its totality, so it's not wrong to call the Jewish people Al Shem Yosef. So in other words, the Shoham stone on the Choshen is Yosef, and the stones on the Ephod, which represent God's Klal Yisrael, are also Yosef. So why cock is that true? Right? I mean, if especially because we're Yehudim, right? Wouldn't you think that Yehuda would be the stone that would be more naturally the representative of the Jewish people? Well, L'chara, I mean, he doesn't go into it over here, but L'chara one can suggest, you know, it says, Ela told us Yaakov Yosef, right, that and Rashi comments that Yosef had so many similarities to Yaakov Avinu, and indeed Yaakov Avinu gave over to Yosef the Torah that he had learned in the Besmedrash of Shem Va'ever. Right, so in many ways Yosef carried forward the legacy of Yaakov Avinu, and you know, from that perspective, you know, Yosef is a kind of all-encompassing term, if we can call all of Klal Yisrael Yisrael Al Shem Yaakov, and Yosef in many ways was the heir to Yaakov and was similar to Yaakov. Even those of us who are not from Shevet Yosef can be referred to as Yosef in that in that sense. So that's number one, right? The point number one that he's making about this connection between the Ephod and the Choshen is the role that the Shoham stones play in each. Second point. Right, as we mentioned in the previous piece, the role of the ephod that the Kohen Gadol wore, as the Gemara says in Zvachim, is to be mechaper for Avodah Zarah. It's to atone for the sin of Avodah Zarah. The Choshen mechaper al adinim, the Choshen mishpat, that atones for justice which has not been meted out properly, when justice has gone awry. How do we know that? Choshen Hamishpat, right? I mean, that's almost inherent in the name, right? V'lochein shehem miramez liyosher hadeos hamishubashos hito b'seichel shizigoram la'avon avodas kochovim. I'm I'm sorry. V'lachem sholam. I'm sorry. V'lachem sholam miramez liyosher hadeos hamishuboshos hetov v'seichel shezegoram la'avon avodos kochavim. Right? So sholam, which is associated with the ephod, is associated as well with the sin of heresy, of improper philosophies and ideologies, which lead ultimately to Avodah Zarah, right? V'yoshte, shugmar hachoshen, eva achrona alav, miramez lehasarat ha'ovel v'hamirma v'ha'ona, shezeh gorim le'ivus hadin. And when we come to contemplate the Choshen's last stone was Yoshve, and the Meshech Chochma assumes that we can judge the character of the Choshen based on its last stone. He doesn't quote this idea, but Chazal say, Hakol Holech Achar Achisum, right? Everything follows, you know, the last thing that you do. So in other words, if the last stone on the Choshen was the Yoshve embodies or symbolizes the Choshen and its ideals to the greatest extent. So if Choshen is all about correcting wrongdoing in judgment, so the stone Yoshveh is associated with that idea of correcting wrongdoing in judgment. If you think about it for a minute, again, he doesn't put it quite in these terms, but in many ways the Ephod, the way he's terming it, relates to the ultimate Aveira Ben Odom Lamakom. Right, when a person, you know, engages in heresy or the like, you know, he abandons the Ribbono Shel Olam in his thoughts. Right, the Choshen, in contrast, relates to the ultimate Averos Bein Adam L'Chavero, when justice is not served, you know, when people are being taken advantage of and the like, you know. So that's what the Choshen is all about. Kmosha Omar Bataras Kahanam Akro de Losasu Ovel Ba Mishko Bimido Ba Mishko Shamode Koridayim. Okay, so now he goes on to explain an interesting pasuk in Yeshayim. Lochain Ogru, Al Basamti Chakot Shim Shosayich. Chag Omar Shoham, Shuasora Satobe Lokus. The Chag Omar Yoshre, Shuasora Smirmo Ba Ovel Shibin Odom Lachaveiro. Lochain Omar Kakot Kadein Vichadein. Right, let's explain the pasuk, let's explain the chazal, and we'll see where he goes with this really a very, very beautiful idea. Right, the pasuk in Yeshayah says, it's the haftarah for Parshas Re'eh. Yisamti kankot shim shosayich, usharayich la'avdei ektoch. Right, when Yerushalayim is going to be built, I'm going, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, by the Bayis HaShlishi, by the Yemos HaMoshiach, the third Beis HaMikdosh, says Hashem, when I build up Yerushalayim, I'm going to build up the walls with all kinds of precious stones, and I'm going to use the stone called the Kadkot. What's the Kadkot? So Chazal have different opinions. One opinion says it's the Shoham stone. One opinion says it's the Yoshve stone. Say Chazal, well, really it's both. And that's the word Kadkot. Kadkot means Kadein v'Chadein. Like this and like that. Right? So in other words, everybody's right. Alright, so you see a statement like that in Chazal, right? And you say, okay, big deal, you know. Do I care? I mean, you know, it's Shoah, it's Yoshve, you know, whatever it is, it will be, you know. I mean, it's not going to be aluminum foil, right? It's going to be some kind of precious stone. What do I care whether it's Shoah or Yoshve? So says the Meshech Chochma, based on our analysis of the Ephod and the Choshen, Chazal here are really talking about something incredible. When the walls of Yerushalayim are going to be rebuilt, that's symbolic not just of the physical walls, it's symbolic of the whole reinvigoration and the restoration of the Jewish people. In other words, that all of the problems that we have now are going to be addressed and solved in the Mos HaMashiach. We've got a bunch of problems, right? Certainly, we could list off a whole bunch, right? But among the problems that we have, the two big ones, are the lack of faith, right, or faith in the wrong things, and the lack of menschlichkeit, the lack of justice. So this machlokas says the Meshech Chochma about which stones are going to be used, la'asid lovo, in building up the walls of Yerushalayim. The machlokas about stones. It's machlokas about what's going to be corrected in Klal Yisrael. Is when Mashiach comes, is the primary thing that's going to be corrected the Shoham? In other words, the focus on heresy, You know, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asid Lavo is going to show us how to think straight and how to cleave to Him and not to cleave to foreign ideologies and things of that nature in Avodah Zarah. Whereas what's going to be corrected, the stone of Yashveh, which represents the restoration of justice and, you know, making sure that the Ben Adam L'Chavero is straightened out. Is that going to be what's going to happen, L'Asid Lavo? So answer Chazal, Kadkod, Kadem V'Chadem. Right? It's going to be a religious revival on every level. The Beit Adam LaMakom is going to fall into place, and the Beit Adam LaChadero is going to fall into place. They're not just talking about stones. The stones there are symbolic of what's going to be La'asid Lafa. Oh, and now there's a great part. You know, if you want, we can break into a Kalbach song after this. V'zeh shesiyei makasuf v'chol bonayich limudei Hashem. V'rab shalom bonayich. Right, the next pasuk, the samti kankoshim shosayich usharayich avnei etzach v'chol gevuleich avnei cheshetz. Right, the next pasuk is v'chol bonayich limudei Hashem. All of your children will be well versed and learned in the ways of Hashem. V'rab shalom bonayich, and great will be the peace that befalls your children. So zakti b'meshach chachma, that pasuk v'chol bonayich limudei Hashem v'rab shalom bonayich is telling us what's is spelling out what's going to happen. V'chol bonayich limudei Hashem, all of your children will be learned in the ways of God. Hainu sheyilmedu hayadiyah habruah basagas achduso yisbarach. Right, that when Mashiach comes, we will have full realization of the unity of God. We won't be misled by any other ideologies, any other religions, any other this, any other that. All of the problems of heresy which we had, you know, during our long galus, are going to be straightened out. V'chol bonayich limudei Hashem, we will all learn the right way to understand and appreciate God. Chmo she'omer b'karbonos lo ne'emar el ve'elohim v'shakai. Right, as the Ramban in particular points out, by the karbonos, which talk about our greatest closeness to Hashem, there are no other words. No other names used to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not Kel, not Elokim, not Shakai, just Hashem, because we will appreciate Karbon, through Karbonos we appreciate Hashem in the fullest sense of the term. Rak Hashem, Rak Yudke Vavke, Shlo Yitain Piskon Pe Lachlok, Shashen Yudke Vavke, Enu Misyachis, Lashun Nimsa Zula Sadori, Ayachu Levado. Right? You know, it's by Karbonos, when we come close to Hashem, we appreciate He's Yudke Vavke, Vizesh Shoham. Now that's what's represented by Shoham. That, you know, Shoham is going to be part of the walls of Yerushalayim La'asid Lavo, meaning whatever, you know, theological issues we have are going to be straightened out at that time. And then the next half of the pasuk, V'rav Shalom Bonayich, and great will be the peace of your children. Shiyasuru mehem ha'avel v'hamirma sishizeh yashveh v'zeh kedim. Right? What's Rav Shalom Bonayich? Great will be the peace of your children. Peace of your children means the Ben Adam L'Chadero is going to be worked out. Right? It's very nice to say that all of our theological problems are going to be worked out on the level, but if we're still, you know, stealing from one another and cheating one another and, you know, beating up on one another and doing all the other things that, you know, once in a while people actually do to one another, right? If we're still doing that on the level, so we got a big problem. Right? So comes the pasuk and says, not only will there be limudei Hashem, will there be a straightening out, Bein Adam LaMakom, but Rav Shalom Bonayich, Bein Adam LaChavero, is also going to be a straightening out of things. Great is going to be the peace among your children. Right? In other words, because, you know, justice is going to be served, all of the cheating and all the other stuff that people do to one another is going to be straightened out. That's the stone of Yashveh. Yashveh is going to be a prominent stone, La'asid Lavo, as well, the Doketev. Right? Think about this a lot. Now it just goes on to say the following, so it's interesting, right? So Shoham is associated with the Ephod. Yashveh is associated with the Choshen. But the truth is, there's still a crossover over here. Because as much as Shoham is the stones that are on the Ephod, but there's also Shoham on the Choshen. Right? Shoham on the Choshen, as he started off at the beginning of the piece, is the Even of Yosef. Right? In other words, Shoham is both the stones that were on the Ephod that included Klal Yisrael, but a Shoham on the Choshen is the stone that relates to Yosef. What's pshat in that? So he says as follows. V'da The kol ashvatim tziaru laviyam b'mechiras Yosef. Right? All of the brothers caused tremendous anguish to Yaakov Avinu when they sold Yosef. The Yosef asma lo hidiya le'ofif. And Yosef as well didn't really, you know, caused anguish to his father, didn't send any telegrams or any postcards from Mitzrayim. Hi, I'm fine. Never mind the riots. Life is great here in Egypt. Right? What's that? He didn't have money, right. So he didn't, mainly didn't get in touch with his father, right? Rak Yosef, how you yarev me'acherem? Right? Okay, so Yosef was afraid of the cherem. But self kol self, 11 out of 12 shvatim caused their father anguish. Aval Binyamin kibeid le'ofif. Binyamin, who was the last of the stones, the Yoshvei, he actually, his ben odom l'chaveiro exceeded anything that the other shvatim did. Right? So in other words, it makes sense that the choshen should be associated davka with the stone of Binyamin, not just because it's the last one, but because Binyamin in his own personal life exemplified all of these ben odom l'chaveiro aspects which the other brothers didn't quite live up to. V'lochein sharsa shchino b'chelka. Right? And that's why the Shechina was zocha to be in the chelik of Binyamin, that the Beis HaMikdash was located in the chelik of Binyamin. Pasuk says, being safe of Shochen, right? That the Beis HaMikdash dwelled, so to speak, between the shoulders of Binyamin. Tremendous lesson, says the Meshe Chachma, it's ultimately the one who has perfected his Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, who's zocha to have the Hashuas HaShechina in that particular place. So how about, okay, so good, so but Yosef is the Shoham on the Choshen. Is there any significance to that? He doesn't spell it out, but apparently if you put two and two together by the Meshe Chachma, so Yosef had really worked on and perfected the idea of, you know, proper Hashkafa. Right? In other words, Binyamin was the one who had perfected Bin Adam L'Chaveiro. Yosef seems to have perfected the proper appreciation of the hashkacha, of the proper hashkacha rather, towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Where do you see that exactly? So you could say, yeah, that's how we survived in Galus, right? But I thought there's one pasuk in particular which really, you know, captures, again, you know, this is my own, so take it for what it's worth, but it captures this tremendous emuna and proper hashkafa that Yosef HaTzadik has. The very end of Sefer Breishis, after Yaakov Avinu dies, so the brothers are afraid that Yosef is going to take revenge on them, so they go to him, they cry before him, and when he reveals himself to the brothers back in Parshas Vayigash, he says, don't worry, Elokim chashavah letovah. You know, you did things that you thought were bad to me, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, he made everything happen in a proper fashion. Hasachat Elokim on you. And do you think that I'm a substitute for the Ribbono Shel Olam? As great as I am, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm me, and don't get the two of us confused together. Right? Unfortunately, in public life, you know, people who reach a certain madrega of prominence don't always remember that Hasachas Elokim Ani, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu and this important person are not synonymous with one another. A lot of important people think that they indeed are God, and it's really to the greatness of Yosef HaTzadik, to the greatness of the Hashkafa that he developed, you know, over his life, that he was able to appreciate the role of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkafa in the world, that Elokim Hashavah L'Tovah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, made everything in the world work out l'tov, for the good. And also, he recognized that no human being, as great as he is, can ever be a god. By contrast, his boss, Paro, did not really have that realization, as Chazal pointed to, right? Paro thought that he was a deity. So that stems from a tremendous strength in Emuna, which Yosef HaTzadik taught to us. Thus, the stone of Shoham, which speaks about the idea of Emunah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and casting aside any other Avodah Zarah thoughts or things of that nature, has a unique relationship with Yosef HaTzadik. You know, and perhaps that's the Shoham and the Eifel, the Shoham and the Choshen, are basically both the same.
Not only after Yosef gets punished
for a lack of bitachon. Right, so, but I think again, right, it's a development. In other words, Yosef HaTzadik doesn't start off that way. He develops. Again, the greatness of all the tzaddikim is, you know, they weren't born tzaddikim, you know, they became tzaddikim. But it also highlights, you know, Yosef was punished kechut ha'saira. In other words, bedavka, because his role was to create and to mold in himself such a tremendous sense of emunah bitachon, he was punished for what really would be considered a very small mistake with regard to emunah bitachon. Ad kedei kach that many mafarshim say, you know, in any other normal person, what Yosef did would have been regular hishtadlus. It wouldn't have been a chisaron and bitachon. It was because Yosef was on a very, very high madrega. As we see, you know, he really, you know, encapsulated the idea of emunah bitachon and the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's why he was held to an incredibly high standard later on. V'lochen kesha'avad yashrei mibinyamin, heru lahem Hashem yisparach gadol mitzvus kibud av etzol dama ben Nesina. And it's for that reason that the whole story of Dama ben Nesina, the famous story, was the story of Dama ben Nesina. Right? Dama ben Nesina was a Nachri, was a non-Jew. And the, you know, the Yoshve, that stone of Binyamin had fallen out of the Choshen. And the Jews, and you know, the Rabbanah needed to replace it in order for the Choshen to be functional. And they found out that Dama ben Nesina's father was a jeweler. Apparently he had this Yoshve stone. Of course they go, they ask for Dama ben Nesina, you know, all kinds, they offer him all kinds of money, you know, to get the stone and to sell it to them. And he says, nothing doing, my father is sleeping, and his head is on the box, you know, and where the Yoshve is kept. To get the Yoshve would involve waking up my father, and I'm not willing to do that. Kibud Av V'Em is so important, I'm willing to lose out on tremendous amounts of money. Of course, Mefarshim will ask the question. I mean, come on, you know, if you woke up the father and said, you know, Dad, we've got this, you know, huge business deal. We're going to make tons and tons of money, you know, you just got to wake up. You tell him, you know, the Charedi would have preferred that. Okay, so whatever the answer is to that, Kasha. Right? But let's see, he showed tremendous Kibud Av V'Em, Dama ben Nesina, you know, to the point where Chazal points to Dama ben Nesina as being the prototype for Kibud Av V'Em for us. It's not coincidental, says the Meshech Chochma, that it was the Yoshve that some Mekoros and Chazal say was the stone that was lost, right? Because, I'm sorry? Gemara doesn't say it straight out. No, so the other Mekoros for the story, they say the Yoshve. So, why Dabka the Yoshve? Because the Yoshve was all about Binyamin, that was the stone of Binyamin, who had perfected Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. So what better, you know, act to be shown through the act of, you know, trying to replace the Yoshve than an act of tremendous Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. Now, it's interesting, Meshech Chochma, Zachar taking a stance on whether Kibud Av V'Em is a mitzvah Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, Ben Adam L'Amako. In Achronim, it's not so poshut. I think we was gave a shiur a couple of years ago. The Minchas Chinuch declares whether Kibud Av V'Em is Ben Adam LaMakom or Ben Adam LaChavero, and he says it has a nafka mina lemaisa. There's a practical application. You know, there's a practical difference as to whether it's Ben Adam LaChavero, Ben Adam LaMakom. Right? Do you have to if you were violating Kibud Av V'Em and you want to gain mechila? So do you have to go and ask the parents for mechila as a ben adam lechaveiro? Because there's no tshuva, there's no kapara shiras chaveiro. So you go and try to appease your friend, or do we say no? It's totally between you and the Ribbono Shel Olam. And oy bazoi, who cares? What's your father and mother got to do with Kibud Av V'Em? You know, it's all about you and God. They were just an instrument for this mitzvah ben adam lamakom. And we may, if you want to do tshuva on a failure to properly do mechabit of v'ein, you don't have to schlep your parents into it, just go and have tshuva with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that itself will bring about a kapar. So the Minchas Chinuch is not really sure as to the answer to that question. Here the Meshech Chochma clearly is taking the position that Kibud Av V'Em not only is it ben adam lechaveiro, but it's even, maybe even primarily, Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, maybe even exclusively Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. You know, being that, you know, he's linking the act of Kibud Av V'Em, which Dama ben Nesina engages in, you know, to the replacement of the stone of the Yoshve, which he's saying is Davka the stone, which is associated with Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. Yeah.
You know, you're supposed to ask if Kibud Av V'Em is a din of the Chesed, because if it's a din of the
It's interesting. Okay, you want to suggest that the chabad one's parents bal karchom, you know, you can bring the chabad one's parents bal karchom. No. I don't want you to stand. I don't want you to stand. Stop standing already. You're driving me crazy by standing. Right?
No,
right.
Before he woke him, he didn't have an order.
Right. Interesting. Okay, you can suggest like that. Okay, just in the little bit of time we have left, I just wanted to look, I don't know if we'll get through the whole thing, but just to raise the issue. The Kuf Mem Aleph, the very end of the, or towards the end of the Sedra, we find after the description of the Big Day Kahuna, right, which takes up Perek Chav Ches, and then Perek Chav Ches describes the ceremony of the Miluim, the inauguration ceremony for the Kohanim, that takes up all of Perek Chav Ches, and then we have the description at the end of Perek Chav Ches of the Karban Talmid. Then all of a sudden we get to the very end of the parasha, Perek Lamed, and we find the description of the Mizbah HaKtoris, right, the altar for incense, which was used in the Kodesh. And all of the Farshim asked the Kasha, wait a minute, you know, the parasha which described the Klei HaMishkan was last week. That was Parshas Truma. So you go through all the Klei HaMishkan, and you go through the Big Day Kahuna, and you go through the Miluim, and then it's like, oh, by the way, forgot something. I just wanted to let you know, by the way, there's another Keli in the Mishkan. There's a Mizbah HaKtoris, the Mizbah HaZav, which sits in the Kodesh. How come that's relegated to the very, very end of Parshas Tetzaveh, almost like an afterthought, right? If you look on Kuf Mem Aleph, the bottom left-hand column, Rabbi Ben Ezra Niskasha, Madua Lichtav Sivoy Asiyas Mizbach Haktoris, Rachachachare Close Parshas Hamishkan Miluim. Right? What's it doing over here? You know, the discussion of the Mizbach Haktoris, it should be back at Parshas Truma with all of the other Kalim. So he basically says the following idea. I mean, there are many, many ideas Mepharshim say to answer this question, but this may be very, very simple. He says, Ha'ikar, Kichoat Sivoyim Kmo Ha'orim, in Ein Oron, Ein Manichim Luchos. Right, all of the kalim which we mentioned earlier are absolutely essential. Right, there's no aron, so it's not like you put the luchos just, you know, in the Kodesh HaKodashim in a paper bag. Right, there's no mizbeach for the there's no mizbeach anachoshes mizbeach achitzon. You can't be makriv karbanos. Right? The Kohanim don't have their begodim, so they can't do anything. In other words, everything we've talked about up till now is an absolute obligation. If it doesn't happen, if you don't have it, you know, it's just not going to work. There's no lechem upon them without the shulchan. Aval mizbach mikvah k'taris shikaro l'kach. But when it comes to the mizbach k'taris, skip the brackets and just turn over to the next page. The third line on the top of the next page. Hanol kaimalon. The haktaras niktar af the main mizbeach. K'mal the Omer Rav b'zroch and daf mentes the mizbeach shenekar makdirin taras b'mekomo. For k'taras, for incense, you don't actually need a mizbeach haktaras. It's eino rak l'mitzvah. It's nice to have a mizbeach haktaras, but the show will go on if you don't have it. Right? That he quotes the Gemara and Zvachim says that. So says Nesha Chochma, you know, the placement of a Mizbah HaKtaris at the end is very poshut. You don't have to come up with, you know, highfalutin ideas to explain it. Everything up till now is essential, and this is a frill. This is a mitzvah. Okay, it's good to have a Mizbah HaKtaris, but if you don't have a Mizbah HaKtaris, you can still have the Avodas HaKtaris. You can still bring the Ktaris, you know, on a daily basis. The Mizbah HaKtaris per se is not going to be ma'akiv. You know, you look at it from that perspective. Again, the Torah wants to spell out what's necessary before putting in what's, oh, by the way, you can also have this, it's a good idea to have this, but it's not absolutely necessary. And then the psukim can make perfect sense in terms of that flow. Okay, well, wish you a good Shabbos, and pick up Ez Hashem next week.